Thank you. Thank you all for coming. I'm Jamie Gray. I'm with the Water Resource Management Assistant Commissioner's Office. I'm the Executive Assistant to the Assistant Commissioner. I want to thank you for coming here. You know, we're so close to the holidays. I scheduled this so that we could kind of avoid the traffic of the this rush hour traffic on a Friday before the holiday week. So I want to thank you. I'll give you a couple logistics. We did the sign-in sheet out front, and I'll send that around to the attendees so that you know who else was in attendance. We do have two folks calling in on the phone, and I don't know if is anyone on the phone now?
Yes, this is TJ from NEHA.
Hi, thanks, TJ. Do we have anyone else on the phone? So TJ's calling in from Colorado to answer any questions that you might have on the credential that we're going to be discussing today. We are recording this, so we will make that available on our public meeting website so that the transcript will be available from this meeting. And other logistics, the bathrooms are out this door to the left. Okay? I want to introduce our staff that's here today so that you know who's in the room. So I will start with Derek.
All right. My name is Derek Hardy. I'm regulatory officer out of Assistant Commissioner Kennedy's coordination office.
I'm Ron Bannister. I'm the section chief in the Bureau of Nonpoint Pollution Control, which includes the on-site wastewater program.
I'm Mark Miller with the on-site wastewater management unit. Most of you know me.
Eleanor Krakowski supervises the groundwater permitting unit. Most of you know me also.
Hi.
Michelle.
I'm Michelle Putnam. I'm the director of the Division of Water Quality. The Bureau is in that.
So I wanted to let you know, thank you. I wanted to let you know who we invited today for the purposes of this meeting. So we have health officers here in the room. We have representatives from manufacturers of some of the advanced technologies that we're talking about. We have design engineers that were invited. I don't know, do we have any in the audience? Okay. And installers of septic systems. So is there anybody that I missed that's represented here? So that's who we try to capture with our invitation. So we thank you for coming, and we look forward to a fruitful discussion. So the purpose of this meeting is mostly to discuss the requirements for authorized installers of advanced technologies, specifically the three technologies that I sent around, the advanced pretreatment devices, products in lieu of laterals and filter material, and drip dispersal. So in our regulations, we have specific requirements for installers of these technologies. And the purpose of the meeting today is to talk about those with you and listen to you. We're not proposing any changes. We want to hear from you what you think of this, and if you have any suggestions on this part of our regulations. So we wanted to receive feedback on these existing requirements. Hi, Tony. How are you? There's all these spots. Why are you taking a chair away from me?
Do you need it?
It was my imaginary friend. I'm just kidding. Okay. So we want to discuss these existing requirements for authorized installers. And if there is consensus that things need to be changed, we are also willing to make some surgical changes to this rule, any corrections that need to be made, but we're not opening up the rule to make any other policy changes right now. So that's our goal for today, is to hear from you what you think about these requirements. Another logistic thing is, since we are recording, I'll ask that when you speak, that you give your name clearly and your affiliation so that we have that for the record. Okay? So I guess I will go through what the existing requirements are to kind of start out that discussion. I put in the front, and I sent around also the excerpts from the rule that lay out those requirements. So in the role we have installer and authorized installer. An authorized installer are those installers that, one, meet the training requirements of the manufacturer, and also that have possession of the NEHA certification, advanced level certification for that test. And the requirement is for them to, authorized installers, to be present for the installation of those components of the system. So for each of the sections of the rule that refer to these three types of technologies, it does say that an authorized installer must install these technologies and that they may install with the manufacturer's specifications. So the question is, are the training requirements for the manufacturer appropriate? Is the credentialing appropriate? What have your experiences been, and what are your perspectives on these requirements? So, who would like to start? I know I've spoken to a lot of you on the phone or in previous meetings, and I know that there are strong opinions, so I'd like them to be heard and to be shared with the rest of the group.
All right, I'll start.
Okay.
Here she would. Try to stay concentric. The first thing I want to say is NEHA is great for a national test, but for as far as installation of advanced treatment systems in the state of New Jersey, doesn't do anything. From what I've been hearing from the contractors that have taken the test, everything that's on that test, none of it, except for maybe seven questions for the drip systems, are the only thing that actually applies to installing advanced treatment systems. NEHA and the whole credential of the advanced credential that you need for installing wastewater treatment systems doesn't do anything for the contractor. It doesn't do anything for us as the representatives of manufacturers to make sure that they're installing it correctly. And then we get contractors that are coming in saying, well, I have a NEHA license, so I can just install it. So, you know, you can't. So that's our biggest problem with the NEHA and the way that we're credentialing people. We need to have a whole different requirement, I think, and training program for our contractors. Where everyone is for credentialing and training our contractors, and even the contractors, I'm sure, are on the same page with that, because the people in the state who are actually doing septic installations as a business, not as a side job, are losing their business because we have other contractors coming in, either working under another NEHA credential person, taking their work away, they're not insured, and that just opens up a whole other kind of worms with the way people are doing business in the state. Want me to keep going?
You could. I would like to hear. Yeah.
Like I said, our problem that we're seeing is, and I think I spoke to you yesterday about how to actually train the contractors in the state. And like I said, NEHA is not the approach I think that we need. I know the manufacturers represent a few manufacturers who do training. Manufacturers come in once a year. We actually offer NEHA credits for our contractors so they can get their credits, because that's another thing. It's very hard to get NEHA credits once you become a NEHA contractor. So you either have to go to Rutgers and take 2 days off, or you have to spend lots of money and go to a NEHA conference. You know, you have travel and expense now all incurred with that. And you just pull out of expenses, and it's not fair to the people who are NEHA accredited to the people who are not. You have counties in this state that are allowing third party contractors to come in and oversee a NEHA contractor, then you have other counties that are actually enforcing. If you're not the NEHA contractor, you are not allowed to pull a permit and do the job, which is the way it should be to protect the people who are actually following the requirements. So, I mean, and that, I'm sure the health departments are here can speak to that as far as what their feelings are with that and how that works in their towns. And another thing I want to bring out is that the NEHA requirement, towns are still requiring that you get your license for that town, they're still required to manufacturer's certification. And even with Infiltrator, they're still requiring an Infiltrator certificate. And a lot of people are unclear. If you're NEHA certified, why do you need to have all this other licensing? NEHA should be the blanket covered license if that's what it's going to be. Or why do you have to get, well, you've got to pay for NEHA, you've got to pay for the town, you've got to pay. The contractor is getting driven with costs that it's only driving the cost of deficit for the homeowner up more than anything else. Because somebody's going to absorb it. And then you have contractors, again, who are not properly licensed and insured, going out, underbidding contractors who actually want to do the job. And the quality of the work is just going down.
So what recommendations would you have from a state level? I can't speak to the health departments and their level of rigor in terms of requirements,
well,
but from a state oversight.
I think we need to develop, and I talked briefly about this yesterday, but we need to try to push something where the state can actually mandate a certification for septic contractors like other states have. And if we have to do it through NEHA, NEHA has to actually change the way they do the New Jersey certifications. And do something so that we have to do something for contractors, whether they have to go to a training class. We have a specific site that's represented by the state with all the different manufacturers' products in there, and they actually go there to get trained, because you can read a book and take a test. That doesn't do anything. When you get to the job site, that's when everything changes. That's when you actually need to know what you're doing. And there are so many different technologies coming out all the time. If you don't keep up on them, and you're going out because you installed a pool system last week, now this week you're going to be installing a PureFlow system. They're all different. So if you don't get properly trained by the manufacturers, if that's what you want to install. But the problem, the bigger problem, is that contractors are just bidding on jobs with the technologies that are being designed. So it's almost, you might do a pool system this week, but you might not do another one for 6 months. You might be doing one a week and put a different technology in there. So it's hard for the contractor to stay up on the training. And the second part to that is a lot of contractors have different crews. So crew A might know what they were doing because somebody was there showing them how to install that system. But the next time crew B's there and the owner's somewhere else, and they're left trying to figure out how to put this thing together, but they're supposedly certified, but nobody on that job is understanding what's going on. So all of that has to get some kind of, you know, pulled together into some kind of training program that everybody that's working for the company goes to, and not just the owner being responsible. If you've got contractors and you've got many people that work for you, you know, pick a couple or all of them that need to go to do the training, because we see it all the time. I mean, we're out there doing the oversight for a lot of our products, and you got A, B crew, or A crew, B crew, C crew, whatever's with you, and trying to explain it to them. You talk to them, you tell them, half of them speak English, half of them don't, and you're out there trying to do your best, because we're the ones, as the service providers, following up to them that have to fix all of their mistakes if they don't come back to do it. So, you know, there's stupid things that happen during the installation that could be corrected if they were understanding the whole process and why you have to do certain things. We're not just telling you to do it to make your life difficult. We're telling you because after you leave, we see what happens when pipes settle and, you know, tanks leak, alarms go off. They're calling me. They're not calling them. So, you know, we have a full understanding of what happens on day two after they're gone and out of job. They all have to understand that. They have to understand why it's important also. Okay.
Thank you, Deb.
I've got a comment on what she's saying. I'm Kirk from the Washington Township Health Department, Morris County. First, there's a question for the state is, I've never taken a NEHA test, and I don't know what's on. And as somebody that requires people to be NEHA certified, you know, Debbie says that some of the contractors say that it's not consistent with our code. Is that true? You guys know if there's questions there that that may be consistent with our septic code.
Well, we're, and maybe TJ is probably the better person to answer this question from NEHA, because we're not permitted to look at the questions or know what the questions are to maintain the integrity of the tests.
Okay.
So there's a whole series of issues related to, you know, how much can we participate in that process.
Okay. So maybe that's like a big piece of the puzzle here is to ensure that if we are requiring a certification, that it's consistent with what we're requiring our installers to do. And NEHA is only one piece of the puzzle. You know, and then it goes on to, you know, the code does address the fact that if you're NEHA certified, that's great, but you still need a letter or some sort of education from the company of whose equipment you're using to install it. So, you know, I can only say for what we do in Chester and Washington Township, who we provide our service to, is before somebody starts that job, I will reach out and say, I need a letter from the service provider, the equipment that you're using, that you're sufficiently knowledgeable to install it yourself. If they do not provide me that, then I call you, or I'll call from Jet, I'll call Steve Pennington, and I'll say, listen, they're installing your equipment, I need you here on site to ensure that it's being installed properly. And, you know, if they can't provide me a letter saying that the installer is educated.
If I could jump in, this is TJ from NEHA. So to answer the earlier question, yes, you both were sort of right on the money that the exam is a national exam, and so when it was originally written, it wasn't primarily focused on New Jersey, it wasn't primarily focused on any specific state. It is the requirements for New Jersey, but again, it was written with a panel of subject matter experts from a variety of states.
This is Ed Wendbrowski from the New Jersey Finance Commission. TJ, I was hoping that you could maybe elaborate, because it's quite understandable that a national organization wouldn't prepare a test with respect to New Jersey's regulations, but I did take a NEHA test many years ago to be a registered environmental health specialist through NEHA, also through New Jersey, and they do put out very rigorous exams. So I took a look at their website to see what are the subject areas that are covered on this website, covered on this test, as identified in their website. And while these things don't necessarily relate to New Jersey, they definitely provide an earthwork contractor with great background material that is necessary to be in the mind of at least one person on that job site. So TJ, I have a list. I don't know if you've got it available at your fingertips, but can you maybe describe for us some of the general construction concepts, such as the use of a survey equipment, levels, transits, the ability to identify soil conditions on a job site, that test provides at least an introduction to our contractors. So I was hoping maybe you could elaborate on that.
Yeah, sure thing. So we have on our website our candidate information brochure, which goes into more detail about the content outline of the actual exam, but 70% of the exam is about site development and installation, 20% is job staging, and 10% is plan assessment. And I'll list a few things out of that largest chunk of the 70% of site development and installation, but like you said, knowledge of soil characteristics and ability to recognize soil characteristics in the field, knowledge of pump performance specifications, total dynamic head and pressurized systems, knowledge of timers and remote monitoring, knowledge of gravity and pump siphon closed system requirements. So for each of these content areas, we have about 6 to 10 bullet points with more of a description underneath that heading. So it gives a good amount of detail what will be on the exam. And again, for the basic level exam, there are 75 questions, and for the advanced, there's 125 questions.
So if I could just follow up with a couple comments. So I think there's a lot of folks in here that have installed systems through the years, folks that have inspected systems over the years. Just let me share with you three examples of egregious errors that I've seen committed that I think would have been prevented had the installer been trained through this NEHA program. One example was I came onto a job site and found a septic tank was installed backwards. Now, that's pretty basic stuff, but you've got an inlet elevation and an outlet elevation that have to basically work by gravity. And the contractor had no idea that there was an inlet and outlet side to a septic tank. I came upon a job back in the 1980s where we had a septic system installation contractor that evidently installed his first disposal field. And when I came upon the job site, no one was there, but there was heavy gauge plastic sheeting that was installed below the gravel filter material, covering the infiltrated surface. And he left that plastic long enough so that he could completely envelop that gravel filter material. And I put a red sticker up, and he called me and he said, "Ed, I see that you have a red sticker. You failed my job." I said, "Yeah, there's plastic sheeting underneath your gravel." And he said, "Yeah, I bought the heaviest plastic sheeting that I could buy. I didn't want to use any of that cheap, untreated building paper that I've seen other contractors use." Complete lack of understanding of how a septic system works at the most basic level. And then there was an instance, Doug Davidson and I, when I was in West Windsor, came upon an installation where the contractor was using scrap lumber that was left on the job site as shims under a septic tank, because they knew that when we came out to do that inspection, we were going to put a level on that tank to make sure the tank was level. Well, 2 years from now, that untreated lumber would rot and settle and cause that tank to back pitch. And just like we heard earlier, those are the types of problems that get recognized after it's far too late. So I'm here basically to appeal for more training, not less. I think that we should have training even for installers of conventional gravel and pipe systems. So any effort to reduce the training requirements, I think is misdirected.
Tony
DiLodovico with Tony D. Environmental Permitting, as a representative of the Builders Association on the advisory committee. To be honest with you, I'm encouraged if the problem is that all the contractors out there are putting in these advanced systems and these, I guess, more innovative products in lieu of laterals and or filter material and putting in dispersal. I didn't know that there was that much going on. So the problem is that everybody's putting these in, and people that aren't knowledgeable in them and people that don't have the certification are putting these in, and nobody's stopping them. Well, number one, that's not a reason to that, well, we have that better enforcement. But two, I mean, this is just for the advanced system, so you're just putting in regular septic systems. None of this applies. As far as I'm concerned, if we're going to allow advanced systems, we have no way, the department has no way of knowing who can put these in properly and if they're going to work properly, or they're moving forward with systems that are different than what the standard systems are. You need some type of certification from the manufacturer of the system that you know how this works and how to put it in. There seems to be, and there needs to be some type of special testing beyond just you're an installer. The only testing we have now is the testing that everybody's required to do under NEHA. That needs to be looked at because there's such a demand for putting in these alternative type systems and advanced wastewater systems. Then I guess we could look at that, but I don't see that we figure out a holding program in New Jersey and it's not utilized that much. Getting to the point about, well, regular systems aren't installed properly. Well, I think if we're going to have our own test for authorized installers, then everybody's got to take a test. I don't think you can separate. If you're going to have our own test, we make a test for everybody and make sure everybody's doing everything right. This is your basic requirements and this is your advanced requirements. But until we get there, and I don't know if we're going to get there, and we're certainly not going to get there real quickly, I think we have to use whatever test is out there. And I guess I need to know, okay, how many of these systems are going in? That, okay, I have 1,000 systems going in, and I don't have that many people licensed, and people are putting them in without these certifications. I mean, that's what I would need to know in order to say, hey, we've got to do something about the test right away.
Yes.
Yeah, Patrick Krieger, Mershon Concrete, manufacturer of septic tanks and also an infiltrator distributor and manufacturer for components for a lot of the alternative systems. I'll sit down if it's okay.
Absolutely.
As far as the testing goes, unfortunately, the test is written so that to re- repeat the analogy I've used a bunch of times, you need to know how fast you can race, drag race down Route 1. Well, the basic answer is you can't drag race down Route 1. But you still have to know the right answer to how fast you can drag race. It's unfortunate, but too much of the test, and I've taken it and passed it, comprises information that is illegal in New Jersey. I know it was written for the state of New Jersey, and that's probably the biggest portion of the problem. But then I remembered that this isn't the first time that DEP or another agency has had this problem. Back in the early 80s, everybody said they were a pesticide applicator. So ultimately, the state came up with a way to license applicators. And that was for the state, because I had that at one point in time. And then I remembered everybody said, I'm a landscape architect. And all of a sudden, the state sorted out, and I don't even know what agency takes care of that. We should have a test. And the state started licensing landscape architects. So maybe it's come to the point where a backhoe operator isn't a septic tank installer, and I know of almost every instance that Ed talked about, because they're my customers, unfortunately. For the state to say, okay, we're going to have to license septic tank system installers, and then leave it to the manufacturers to teach and certify the individual alternative systems. But it really should be a system. If Infiltrator makes a product that's replacing stone and pipe, that's still just a system. You know, it's not a Fuji, it's not a BioClear, it's not any of that, because it's after it's outside of the septic. I think that's the direction that the state's got to go. That, you know, you can have a backhoe operator, but he doesn't know that he can't stick wood underneath the septic tank to level it out. He just knows the tank should have been leveled. That's the way the state's got to address it. Otherwise, you know, you're going to be back to what Sue's talking about, that, I can take and become certified, as a matter of fact, I am, to be an installer for some of these systems, and I'm not going out to the job site, but I can say I'm the installer, all right? It's got to be addressed so that the installer is the person who's out there excavating, out there putting the tank in, making sure it's level, right? And if he's got that license to install septic systems from the state, then he can go on and get a certification from Fuji or, you know, I have to pick a system, you know. Do it that way. And let the state only oversee the basic installer's license, but have it be a state situation.
So we've heard that, and we do not have the statutory authority to have a licensing program for any septic professionals. So that's something that the department is limited in. As an executive branch of government, that would have to take an act of legislature to give us that authority. So we have heard that, and I think we can say that we agree that that would be great. That's what other states have. They have their own licensure program. So I don't know, Mark, do you want to weigh in on that at all?
No, you're absolutely correct. I mean, one of the downfalls of New Jersey is that we don't have an industry group that represents the on-site industry. We don't have a New Jersey version of NALRA like they do down in Delaware, or like a PSMA like they have out in Pennsylvania, that lobbies the legislature to pass laws that enable them to have programs just like you're talking about. And I agree 100%. But, you know, that's the way we really need to go. Heck, we've licensed tanning salons in the state, as most of the health departments will tell you, tattoo parlors. But yet, here's the one of the biggest utilities of any home, the wastewater system. And we've got, you know, approximately 500,000 of these homes served by on-site systems in this state. But we don't regulate anyone. This department doesn't regulate anyone affiliated with the design construction. Yeah, we require you to be a PE, but there's no septic system designer that this department regulates. You know, there are regulations regarding pumpers, but that's a registration. It's not really a licensing program that you're talking about, where we can go and have a complaint process or have some kind of system where if there's a report about a bad installer, we can go actively go against them, because everything's delegated down to the local health departments. And we've got a lot of them across the state, and you're right, they're all different. We have some that are very good at regulating these. They have local licensing programs like Debbie spoke about, but that's not common. I mean, that's mostly up in North Jersey. I don't think there's a single one down in South Jersey where they license the individual installers. They'll have lists, but I don't think it's like a licensing requirement by ordinance. I don't know what Cumberland does, but it's not a law. It's not an ordinance. So, but you have a lot of disparity in how this is being enforced because of those kinds of issues. And Pat's right, if we did this at the state level, we could have a program like that. But without some kind of effort to get legislation and legislative approval, we can't be delegated the resources to start a program and develop rules to have a program in order to make that happen. Would we do it? Heck, you know, if we had the resources to do it, absolutely. If we were, you know, given the okay, sure, but, you know, that's not something the department can do.
Well, maybe it's time for the department to go reverse engineer it and talk to the legislature. You know, if there's not going to be, I personally think that you're not going to get the guys who are in the field digging on a daily basis to say, okay, let's band together. That's just not going to happen.
I think the good guys would.
Sorry?
We have some very good installers in the state, and a lot of them have expressed interest in doing that. But there's just not that cohesiveness.
Right.
And it's, as far as the good guys go, it's mostly they get undercut by the installers that use another NEHA certified person just to do the installation of that advanced treatment. They do the rest of it, and you know, they might shave $5,000-$10,000 off their price, and you know, it's not right, because that good guy can install it, you know, perfect in the way it's supposed to be by the manufacturer.
Patty?
Hi, I'm Patty Coffin with Jet. I'm Jet Environmental in New Jersey. I see a lot of different sides of this. I'm a septic inspector. We're all through TSMA. They have a real good handle on how they navigate that. I'm a pumper, so I understand all the diversities of that too. And I own Jet. So what I see is, it's a shame that there's bad behavior with installers, and I think that should go back to the health departments. When they're out inspecting it and they see it, they have to stop right then and there. So what should be there should be corrected. Nothing covered over. Because Debbie's right, they go back out, or the ones that the water dialer's gone off, or whatever, or electricians don't know how to set up the timers. It's a lot. It's a lot of anxiety. It's almost you shake your head. What did I get myself into? I went on the site, the NEHA site, yesterday, and I've looked at it before. When I first get on it and navigate through it, all I see is registered health officials. I had to really go deep into it and Google wastewater before I even got to anything that pertained to installers or anything. And it's like, and then I look at, they need 12 credits. 2-year period. You have guys that are high demand jobs, make a living, and now you're asking them to go to continuing education classes. They're not local. I know when I sat in the class for Rutgers in June, that was my busiest time for everything that I do, but I was there. It was an investment. It was $300-some. It was my lost revenue for the day. It was counting on my employees to pick up my office and keep her running. There's a lot of installers that they're going to laugh at you and say, now we need to be certified to be an installer. You're going to get them piggybacking off other guys. We see it now. I see it in my area that one guy's running 10 jobs all over the place, but he doesn't have an ECOP. And then the other thing is, I get, because I'm a pumper, I paid my pumping license to Oakland. Septic installer's license, $150, in addition to the licensing fee, it goes on, you need a bond, the whole bit. A current NEHOC card and alternative treatment certifications must be presented prior to obtaining a permit. What is an alternative treatment certification? If you're going to do alternative treatment certification, I read this a little too late in the day and called them, they were already closed. I'm a jet distributor. I should be certifying my guys. If they want to do jet, come to me. Come to my office. I have a training book that they should walk out with. Just like when I walk out of CSMA, I walk out with a book that tells me this is the criteria for this time. I have a list of people. Say you have a list of your installers. Then I just sat through and looked at a video, took the book. Well, sorry, our book has changed. It's up to me to get them a new book. It's up to me before they bury that tank. Yes, the risers are sealed. This is done. The aerator's leveled. The time dose is correct. So that when we all leave, we all look great. But to turn around and say to the guys, listen, now you need to take another thing. Now you need more time away from what you do. You're going to see guys piggybacking off each other because they don't have the time. And they're not going to care. And it's the after sales that answers the phone calls and puts the fires out. Your install has already been paid, so that little chunk that we get as we do our renewals is nothing. It's almost an inconvenience fee to me because I'm out there trying to put the fires out. So the NEHOC sounds great. Look at the site. It's all registered health officials. Let them deal with it. As for bad behavior out in the field, it needs to be nipped in the bud before it's covered up. And then we go back out. After sales should be real easy, talking to the customer. NSF is another thing that has to be into consideration when we do all this, the NSF certifications. And, I mean, it's a lot of little things. At the end of the day, you kind of say, gee, I might as well go work in a food store. It's a lot easier. But you have people that are talented. They're installers, they're tank builders, they're all talented in what they do. So the bad behavior needs to be leaned out. Pull them in. Hey, listen, you need to get involved with Patty, Jet Environmental. She's going to put you through a little training period. It might be an hour. She might need to show up on 3-year job sites, and they need to be perfect. Mm-hmm. Then it gets closed up. And then I don't think we're going to be beating it back and forth. Like, who's who? If the NEHOC really works best for the health officials and the engineers, that's it. Because the installer's going to put in the pump that's designed, it's going to put in the tank that's designed because that's what that recipe says. That's what that plan says. It's going to do it. And every site is different. Every installer is different. Every system is different. So you go out and you have the plan to facilitate and make it the best execution that you can. With all these little regulations and little fees, the guys are going to get hung up with it. And they're just going to piggyback because I already say it. I say it.
So you think that the training by the manufacturer is satisfactory for installers?
You want to install a jet, come to Ed, my representative. We've already discussed having a meeting and inviting health officials so they know when they're out on site. They're the ones that are signing off on this job. Okay. I mean, I have a starter sheet that I have to go through to sign off that everything meets its criteria. So the health official, so you come for an hour. This is for troubleshooting. If you have a team, if you're the owner, say I'm the owner of the business and I have 5 machine operators, you don't have to be there, but 1 license. Then they sign off. Jet Environmental has been approved to install jet systems. I don't care if you have one person or 100 people. Make sure your guys are well trained. I'm out on site and there's a problem, guess what? Bob and Larry, you're going to come back to my office and sit down and go over this. Or, guess what? Your boss got the training manual. Sit and read it. It has troubleshooting stuff in here. Or, on the phone call away. Don't bury it. Once it's done, it's done. Fix the problem before it's covered over. So if you're able to just train them on that specific product. Every product's a little different and a little quirky. By the time you get to installing something, you probably have already installed a control panel somewhere for a pump system, probably installed a tank. As for being installed backwards, who's that? Who delivered the tank? Or did the installer move the tank itself? Things happen. Things do happen. But knowing better, knowing it is doing better. You know, I've already pointed out in my short time with Jeff some of the stuff with my installers, and you know what? I go back out. They know when they see me, it's not going to happen again. Let's fix it. And I have a list, I have a cheat sheet for myself. I know who the engineer is, I know who the installer is, and the electrician. And they're the people I'm going to call before I call the health department and say, I have a problem. But I had to do that because I don't have enough time in the day to babysit installers. I don't have time. So I think they need to be trained by the manufacturer that they want to install. And if there's updates, it's I'm responsible to get those updates out to them.
Yeah,
and just tacking on to that, because we also do the same thing for our products as well. We do oversight and we have to do a startup checklist to make sure everything is installed properly. But the one thing I've been seeing that is kind of hard to do if you haven't been on the job, we certify our contractors and we used to give out the certification. If I have 100 contractors, I can tell you there's probably only about 5 that I would actually let come pick up a system, go install it, and say, see you later, because I know you're going to do a good job. Because you don't know who's going to be on the job. They have different crews. But, and then you never know what they're going to be trying to pull fast one in the meantime. You're always watching them, so is my point. But the other thing that I'm seeing is that the health departments are actually requiring that you have a certification to install a system. Well, take EcoFlow for existence, example. We're just started selling that system. A lot of the contractors have not installed an EcoFlow system. They're not going to install one. Yes, we've done training in a classroom, but to me, that's not certification. When you put it in the ground, we're there making sure that you're installing it properly, make sure it's being hooked up correctly, you understand how it works. That's, and after you do a couple of them, now you're actually able to be able to become certified. So then we can actually issue the certification, but the health departments are requesting that we provide them with a certification that they're authorized. Well, they're not authorized, but we're going to be the ones authorizing their installation. So some of the health departments have to kind of change that criteria, that if they may not be authorized installers yet, but they're working on it because obviously they have to put some in. So I don't know if you guys can do anything like that from the state level to the health departments, that either require their actual certification from us or that there will be somebody from the manufacturer representative that will be on site to authorize the installation.
Well, we have the minimum requirements, which was laid out in those regulations that I handed out, which requires that there's training from the manufacturer as well as some sort of written evidence from the manufacturer saying that the installer is sufficiently knowledgeable. So it's not a certification from the manufacturer, but it's written evidence that they're sufficiently knowledgeable. Now, the health departments have every right to, those are the minimum requirements. So they have the rights to go above and beyond that and require more.
Well, I understand that, but it's impossible to certify somebody if they haven't actually installed it yet. Mm-hmm.
That's up to the manufacturer to determine what is sufficiently knowledgeable. And what I'm hearing from you is sufficiently knowledgeable is you have done a number of installs of your system.
Right, correct.
I think Debbie's question is a little different.
If I could jump in real quickly, I've heard a few comments about the continuing education requirement for the credential. And we certainly understand individuals not being able to come to our conference or, you know, go to other conferences in their immediate area. And that's why NEHA, we have our e-learning platform, So for individuals that can't travel or, you know, limited budgets, you know, we're all in the field of environmental health. We work with a lot of local and county health departments where they don't have the funding to send their credential holders to conferences to get these CE requirements. So they go to e-learning. We have, on average, about 300 videos that are watched every week. We do have some water quality and on-site wastewater systems videos on there from previous AEC conferences, which is the NEHA Annual Educational Conference. So it is quite popular to watch videos for the individual's CE requirement. So 12 every 2 years, and so I just wanted to throw that out there that we do have those available, so that way individuals can do it from the comfort of their own home and just watch those videos for their CEs.
Thank you, TJ. Mark, do you want to clarify?
I think Debbie's question was a little bit different, and it was basically almost like an apprenticeship program is what you're talking about. So in those situations, typically your guys, Tri-State guys, are the authorized installers while they witness the basically the training of the new installers until they are comfortable enough with them to be the installers on record for future systems.
But some health departments are then interpreting that as we're the NEHA certified person. Like, no, I am not taking responsibility for their whole job. I am there as a representative manufacturer making sure that the advanced treatment system gets installed properly. Sussex County is starting now. If they're saying, oh, Tri-State can do your NEHA certification, but we have to pull a permit. We're responsible for the tank installation, the soil, the bed, the whole entire system. I'm like, no freaking way am I doing that. So, sorry, I'm not having that responsibility. The code says, I believe, we are responsible for the installation of the advanced treatment system section, not the entire system. And we shouldn't have to pull a permit because we're overseeing somebody to get certified to put the advanced treatment system in.
That's an interesting question.
Yes.
Hi, Bill Longo, Lortech Engineering. I have a question, and I don't see it in the code, but I do see it interpreted in many different ways, and I really need some clarification on this. The code as it's written, does it say anywhere that the septic, that the advanced treatment certification needs to be held by a principal or an owner of a septic installation company?
No.
No.
So, Mark, you want to answer that?
Because this, everybody knows this room, that's the way it's being interpreted by certain health departments. And it's also being used as a sales tool by a few select contractors in my area to promote themselves, saying, if contractor ABC doesn't have to need a certification, he can't get involved in any of these systems. And that's not the way I read the code. I just wanted clarification.
No, that's not how the code reads.
Okay. Thank
you. Yes.
To piggyback on what
Debbie
said.
Can you state your name, please?
I'm Jeff Hoffman from Flemington Precast. Another township up in North Jersey, Harding Township, is pretty much similar. You're not, they want somebody to take out the permit, like she was describing as well. That prevents, or makes it very difficult for new, you know, trainees on the system who are just learning it, who perhaps have sat through a training class and now are doing the practical install from proceeding, unless they get somebody else who has the NEHA certification and manufacturer's, you know, approval to get on board with, you know, becoming an approved or authorized person. And the disparity between the county or local health departments and the DEP, especially when it comes to these advanced treatments, seems to be widening rather than, you know, staying fairly on par. It's a roadblock.
Do you have a recommendation on how that would be addressed with the, I mean, is there something that we could be doing with our regulations that would?
In my opinion, you know, you've got the state regs. Okay, and then you've got the locals or counties that can one up and have their own regs, such as their own installation criteria and licensing. I believe Washington Township. Township is a licensed jurisdiction, et cetera. But in the case of Harding, the woman up there, like Debbie said, I'm not going to sign off and take out the permit on the system. I'm just there to provide the training. But if we could get everybody on board with a consistent training and licensing instead of this municipality, that county, or whatever, it's just a little bit over the top, and especially when you get to the expense of having various licenses for various jurisdictions. A more uniform type of arrangement would be helpful, and the allowance of the manufacturers or their reps to oversee an installation of that product or system apart from the rest of it, the bed or what have you, it's different, and they're not getting that, I don't think.
They being the some of the local health departments?
Yeah.
Chris, did you want to pipe in on what the requirements are for Washington?
We do have a long-standing licensing requirement, and to confer with your opinion, I would want to see a commission of training. And maybe the training that we're requiring now should be looked at, you know, from a NAHOP perspective. If it's not applicable to New Jersey requirements, then it should be looked at and changed. But I wouldn't want to for diminishing of any credentialing. We have a licensing requirement. We require in Washington Township that if there is an advanced treatment as part of the job, the contractor has to be NAHOD certified. We used to have NAHOD just for the NAHOD component, and the licensed contractor could do the rest, but the NAHOD person would have to come on site. And we were having a lot of problems with the NAHOD the advanced treatment rep coming, and it just became very difficult, and we honestly didn't have confidence that the advanced treatment rep was overseeing that part of it. So we have, you know, someone who we're not certain of their abilities and knowledge with this kind of off-site person who we would make appointments, and no-shows. So We recently amended our ordinance in Washington Township that if there's any part of advanced treatment in the job, the contractor has to be certified.
And the actual certified installer has to be present at every inspection. So it's not just for that piece of advanced treatment, it's for the excavation, the select fill, the stone, you know, whatever they're using, every component, that certified installer has to be.
Okay, so you're saying the authorized installer has to be present for the whole install.
The whole installation. And that, you know, takes the heat off of Debbie and Mr. Hoffman that they're not certifying the installation of that complete system. They're not, you know, saying that they're overseeing that complete system. It's that NEHA certified contractor now that's taking that responsibility. And you know, I know a lot of people frown upon the fact that there's a separate license in Washington Township. But the main key there is we have requirements above and beyond what the state requires, such as the NEHA requirement for advanced treatment. But we also, you know, you're allowed a 4-inch effluent filter. We noticed that we were having big issues with the 4-inch effluent filter plugging up within like 3 months of the new system going. So now we require a 6-inch effluent. If you're replacing a tank in Washington Township, if somebody has an existing 1,000-gallon single compartment tank, we're not going to, you know, make them replace that with a brand new 2-compartment tank. But if they're already going to be replacing that septic tank, we tell them it's got to be a 2-compartment tank with a 6-inch output. And what that's doing is it's buying them a longer period of time in which they have to clean that filter, you know, in between regular cleaning. So they're getting a year out of it rather than 3 months with a smaller filter. So there's good things and main reason why we require those contractors to be licensed in our town. It's so they know of our specific requirements.
And who runs the licensing program? Your department?
The testing requirement, but we do accept the NEHOP certification in lieu of our test.
And they have to be licensed home improvement licensed to the state of New Jersey.
I don't know. When people come, they'll say, oh, no one else requires a license. I mean, what's your opinion on the prevalence of individual licensing by locals?
You're the ones that I'm familiar with that do. So it wasn't picking on Washington Township.
Mount Olive?
Yeah.
Us?
There's not many, and I'm not saying diminish any of the requirements or training, because I think that's a good idea, but what I'm saying or suggesting is that throughout the state, get everybody on the same playing field.
You know, if we could get collectively know that our septic contractors are educated and know the regulations within the state, you know, it wouldn't be something that we would, you know, have a problem fighting. It's just knowing that they know that those requirements, those specific requirements. And, you know, it's basically to get the guy that's the landscaper down the road that comes in and says, oh, I'm a friend of his, and I'm going to put the septic system in, and it just snowballs from there. That's what we're trying to avoid, because it ends up costing us a lot of time and unfortunately, the homeowner, a lot of money correcting a problem that could have been fixed with just having sufficient knowledge.
And let's face it, in this industry, we've all seen the good, the bad, and the ugly, and it's the ugly that screwed up royally for the good.
I think that's why this is here. This is why we have this, right?
Charlie Ray, with Anua, represent manufacturers. Just a quick point, because I see the entire United States and Canada, and it's all over the place, our industry. Without recreating the wheel, I would suggest everybody take a hard look at Minnesota's program and Rhode Island. It's got 30 years in existence. The state mandates, and the University of Minnesota manages, puts out the material. It's very localized. When I go do trainings, and I do them in California, Minnesota, Wisconsin, it varies, and New Jersey. New Jersey has a good structure. But I can tell the difference when I'm training installers, and you better know your stuff when you go to Minnesota, because those installers know everything. They know advanced treatment. I mean, we're talking PME, TSS, E. coli, we're talking all the great work. It's a very successful program, so I would take a hard look without regretting at Minnesota and Rhode Island. Those are two that I know that are very successful, and I have to be on my game big time.
And they have individual licensing programs.
Yeah, but the university is heavily involved, actually, in our that's actually something I would look at as a structure. So it works very well. I mean, for Rutgers or whomever, but the universities can get into grant funding. There's all kinds of ways to make it work. But I would really take a look at those two things as an overall structure. And I can see the success, if I'm more competitive here, based on the individuals that I'm training. And it's night and day. I won't name the states that I'm training on the night part, but or day. Anyway.
Yeah. Speaking, this is Tony Villarico again, speaking for the Builders Association, we've always had the issue of the septic, septic standards not being the standards, and the locals could be more restrictive in anything they wanted to do, and then the law allows that, and the law says it's supposed to submit the ordinances to the department. It's always been the question of, well, the law and say the department has to approve the ordinances before they can be effective. Got lots of discussion about that throughout the years, and what the Builders Association always wanted to emphasize is that we couldn't have it just be one set standard, just like the residential site improvement standards. At least if there is a more restrictive requirement, there's a reason for it. It's not just to just not have houses or whatever. But there's a valid reason based upon the treatment and design standard and why it's there. Washington Township is a good example. They have an excellent program, so they got to go up beyond that, and they have valid reasons for it, and that's fine. And as you say, North Jersey is different conditions than South Jersey, and so it makes sense that hopefully you might want to have different standards. So then, since we can't change that, then it would be unacceptable for the builders to then say, look, all the design standards and how many houses you can build and whatnot, that can be throughout the state anywhere you want, but then once you're going to install it, you can't have separate requirements. That just doesn't make sense. If someone has a good program and they have a valid reason for why they say they need the licensing, that should continue. If someone's reading the new reg and saying, well, this reg is telling me the authorized installer has to pull a permit for everything, but really has no reason why, just thinks that's what it says, well, that should be fleshed out and say, no, you don't have to require that. You know, if you're just allowing anybody, you don't have a licensing program, and anybody can put in the rest of the system if you weren't putting this in, well, there's no requirement to have the authorized installer pull the permit for the whole thing. If that needs to be clarified, that should be clarified with the towns. Not that you're just requiring these things and not really knowing why you're requiring it. Again, you mentioned that you don't have a law that allows you to have a test and to have a licensing program, so I don't know how you can be more restrictive in who can install things and whatnot, since you don't have a way of doing that. I don't know that the local county and then the local health departments have a way of getting together and coming up with a licensing program, you know, at Washington Township as an example, but I'm sure they don't have a budget to get anybody licensed. So we should keep talking about that and see what we can do, but I don't think it's appropriate that you just say, sorry, you can't have your own more restrictive requirements in actually putting the system in, when you can have more restrictive requirements on the design of it and the placement. That doesn't make sense.
Sir, come back up.
Nick, Patrick Grieber with First Shot Concrete again. Maybe the MIHA is this, you know, until the state comes up with their own, maybe that's the start, got me the starting point, only in as much as listening to the township. They're saying that that's their base criteria. The FAA says, okay, you want to be a pilot, you first get your medical, well, that's your MIHA. Then fly with an instructor, well, that's Debbie,
your training.
Tri-State, right? And then finally they let you fly the plane by yourself. Maybe that's the same course that the state's got to take, where you set a criteria and you can't bring an outside license in and say, I'm the installer, because Debbie's right, she's not flying the plane. She's just trying to teach that person how to do it, right? But somebody else said, you're fit to fly first, and that's the neon. Right, so you kind of set the outline correctly. It's just a case of mandating that, you know, like Washington, sounds like Washington Township's doing, hey, give us the NEHA first, and that's the person that's ultimately responsible. So if an installer wants to go with Boot or whatever system that they're going to go, or if you're that interested in, okay, go get your medical, go pass the NEHA, all right? And not let someone else say, well, we'll use my NEHA, you're going to bring your backup. It eliminates all the problems I've heard in here, right? So actually, basically, what I'm saying is Washington Township nailed it. Yeah, and that's where you guys, that you're right. You know, all right, you're the installer, great, NEHA. Good, we got that done. Deb is gonna oversee, okay, she's the instructor. Still, you're on, you being the pilot in command, are on the hook. Mm-hmm. You know, you got it right. You just stop right there.
Yeah, I mean, really, you just need base installation knowledge to start, and then the manufacturers, but it's different. How you put my system in is completely different than others. And so you got to have a base so that the individual knows the soils, knows how to dig a hole, knows just the base information, whatever that license is, A or training. And then we require our representatives and ourselves, if we're available, to train on our specific products. So they have to go through class, PowerPoint, and then we required them to be on, and this is nationwide, at a minimum of two installations with an authorized representative, minimum of two. And in some states, they've actually been able to put it in the bid, and they're there for everyone. In that sort of sense, it's awesome. Because where that happens, in the states where that happens, I get no call business, zero. My distributors that are on everything. I know that's not a reality because, you know, it increases cost, but the bottom line is we're leaving the responsibility to our representatives to basically not only train them, but, you know, get a feel for what these people are going to do to try to not. Because, like everybody said, once the system's installed properly, everybody's up the creek. She's getting calls. I'm getting calls. The homeowner's not happy. The Board of Health's involved. And it's a total money loss and a time waster. So, you know, we're very critical in not only how it's done, but the type of people we work with, too, because you already heard this before. So, yeah, I think there should be two levels, basically.
Well, I think there are. I mean, what you're saying, having the basic of the NEHA and then the training of the manufacturer on top of that, is what we already have as a requirement, but only for these advanced technologies. But for Washington, it's for all installers, correct?
I think, you know, the best, if we're moving towards a solution, is to get everybody at the same level. And, you know, if it's not NEHA, then it's gotta be something that's done by our state, that's specific to our state, that ensures that every septic contractor that goes out there is educated to the basics of installing a septic system. Because our test at Washington Township is not hard. If you're an installer and you've done at least two or three systems, you can take the test and pass it. It's elevations, it's, you know, saying what the different components of a septic system are. It's not hard. So, you know, it's, if you have some knowledge of septic systems, you should be able to pass it. And, you know, I go over, when we grade the test, I go over with the contractors if they got something wrong. I want to make sure they know what they got wrong in that they have some sort of education. And it's just making sure that it's not somebody that has no clue what they're doing, going there and costing the homeowner. And NEHA, if NEHA is the direction that we're going, that everybody has to be NEHA certified, then that's what it has to be. But it does have to bring all the septic contractors onto the same level with some basis of installing septic systems.
Ed Wendbrowski from Pinelands again. I concur, really. I think that we should be providing training to all installers. I wanted to circle back to my comment about a few examples of installation errors. To be clear, none of those people were malicious. I didn't use the term bad actor or good, bad, and ugly. They're not ugly. They just were, you know, for lack of training. So I want to make that clear. The other thing, though, relative to the NEHA certification, I think it's a good thing. But one thing that I do take some exception to is the requirement, and we heard some protests to this earlier, that you have to have 12 continuing education credits every 2 years. And then in addition to that, you have to pay NEHA a renewal fee of $125 every 2 years. And in my view, that might be overkill. I think that if you've studied for the NEHA exam, you passed the NEHA exam, you've demonstrated that you've met that minimum level of expertise, I don't think that you should have to send NEHA $125 every 2 years. Sorry, TJ, to retain that credential. It should be a lifetime credential. And if you're installing systems that you need continuing education training, you go to the Rutgers class, you get that. NEHA doesn't have to recognize those credentials. So I just want to make that point, that if we're going to relax anything, it would be this fee to NEHA in perpetuity and the continuing education credits in perpetuity.
I definitely understand that. This is TJ again. I definitely understand the pain of the continuing education requirement as well as the renewal fee. The CE requirement is there for all of our credentialing programs in order to have our credential holders be updated on best practices. So that way they're aware of any new information. So it's not a certificate program where you pass an exam, you take a training class, then you get this certificate, and, you know, 20, 30 years later, you're still, you know, you could be attending some classes, but it's not required to attend any continuing education. So I definitely understand that, but the credential as it stands, it'll always have that two-year requirement in there.
I just wanted to follow with one last point, not directly related. There's a lot of variability in the way the various municipalities and counties oversee septic system construction in the state. Some, like Washington, are on top of their game. The county that I first started out in, I don't know if anybody's here from Ocean County, has completely eliminated the inspection of septic systems, and they've turned it completely over to the design engineer. And when I worked for Mellett Tully Associates, we would go out and we would do inspections to certify as-built conditions. And I can tell you, periodically, we'd come upon a job and the entire system was backfilled. And it puts the engineer in a very difficult position to tell that contractor, it's never gonna happen. Dig up the septic tank because I wanna see that we've got a stable foundation under that septic tank. You basically go on a leap of faith. You see what you can see, and then you're signing off on that system, but you run the risk 2 years later, or 3 years later, or 6 weeks later that there's a problem. So there's tremendous variability in the way the administrative authorities handle the ultimate approval of these systems.
That's why a number of our engineering firms do not
do those. Right, sure. Because you're buying a tremendous amount of liability for a $500 fee or something like that.
Clarify with the gentleman on the phone that you
don't
need continuing education for the
NEHA?
You do.
You do need 12 continuing education hours every 2 years.
Is the other option as far as if you take the test over again? Is it kind of set up like, I believe, a pesticides applicator's license? If you don't get your necessary credit, you have to take the state test over again. Up for another 5 years. Is that how NEHA is, or if you don't do the credits, you can never get relicensed?
Oh, no. We're not that mean, luckily. So as a nonprofit, we do, you know, we have a little grace period that if you miss your CE hours, if you, you know, forgot about it, you were busy during the holidays or anything, you know, a month or two later, you can still send in your CE hours, or even if you didn't attend any in the past 2 years, you can watch those videos and still retain your license or your credential. If it goes past, however, you still have that ability to reapply and retake the exam again.
Debbie.
This is Debbie again. Just to go back to the health department, I would like to see something from the state level down to all the health departments in the state that kind of follow what Washington is doing. Because if we're going with the contractors have to be NEHA certified in order to install an advanced treatment system, then that's what it should be across the board. And then, because some counties are allowing you to go full permit, not asking you if you're NEHA certified or not, they get out to the jobs, they find out it's an advanced treatment system, and they're like, well, where's the NEHA person? Oh, well, nobody told us we had to be NEHA certified. They played dumb. It happens. Then they gotta go find you. So the health department should be responsible for, if you're pulling an advanced, or pulling a septic permit for an advanced treatment system, should have your NEHA license, because that's fair to all the people who have their NEHA license and are going to pay for all these things, paying the fees, going to the classes, doing what they're supposed to do to follow the code. As far as the advanced treatment part of it, yes, one, somebody from the manufacturer rep should be on site to oversee that part of the job only, not the entire job. But, and then to follow up on that, why can't we offer NEHA credits when you actually get certified by the manufacturer, and why can't that count as part of your NEHA credits? Because after all, that's what this is all about, is installing advanced treatment systems that we're installing every day. So if you get certified as a contractor, and you're putting in a whatever system, hoop system, pure flow system, whatever, you should be able to obtain so many credits for that to go towards your 12 credits that you need for NEHA. And when you do your retraining with the manufacturer, that should count towards NEHA credits. Because some of these classes you have to go to obtain your NEHA credits don't really apply. And if we're talking about installing advanced treatment systems and doing it correctly and keeping up on the terms, the times, then the NEHA credits should be coming from the training that you're getting in the field and from the manufacturer that you're actually working with.
No.
So TJ, do you want to speak to how people can get credits applied to the courses that they offer to their the people they're training for NEHA?
Yeah, definitely. So we offer a few variety of different ways to get CE credits. So I mentioned e-learning, but if individuals in that room right now are already attending different courses, as long as it's related to environmental health or on-site wastewater, that would 100% count towards your CE requirement. And so you can just submit those hours. You don't need to provide us with a certificate or anything like that. Of course, if you're audited, we would need some additional proof. But our online submission form is quite easy. You just list the course name, the dates that you attended the course, and then the competencies that you learned. And it would get uploaded into your account within about a week. If you're teaching a course, you can also submit that up to 10 hours every 2 years. So unfortunately, you won't meet your full 12-hour commitment if you're teaching a course, but you will get a full 10 hours out of that. But again, as long as it's related to environmental health or on-site wastewater systems, then 100%, it doesn't have to be NEHA, from NEHA or NEHA branded. We will accept other courses as well.
Okay, maybe not have phrased the question correctly, because we actually do manufacture training, and we actually apply to NEHA and get NEHA credits for our contractors, but I'm specifically talking about when you actually get certified by the manufacturer for in-the-field training, can that actually be applied towards NEHA credits that they need?
Okay, so are you asking if you take an exam for another certificate program or something, would that count?
No, she's talking about the field time. The field time where they're doing the training out in the field.
Okay, yeah. As long as it's some type of training, then yes, that would count.
How would we go? I mean, because right now I have to submit an application to NEHA to get the credits approved, so is it just a blanket certification for a certain manufacturer that you can we have to submit to you? Because, I mean, I still have to pay for that. And I forget what the fee is, but in order to get a NEHA accredited class.
Yeah, so if you're taking the class and you don't want to have to pay that CE program approval fee, a CE program approval fee is purely for courses or instructors or conferences that are looking to market their CE program. So that way they can say, hey, look, come look at our course because NEHA's approved us for continuing education. It's not required to get pre-approval for a course. It just means that when we at NEHA are evaluating the CE, it could be approved or it, you know, might not be approved. But if you are attending, like I said, a training of environmental health or on-site wastewater, then yes, that would 100% be approved.
TJ,
did I answer the question, or am I still missing the target?
A system, whatever system that may be, it's going to be worth how many credits, though, because it's in the job, it's on the job, it's in the field training, so how many credits is that, and maybe this is an offline conversation we need to have specifically, but it should be worth a certain amount of credits, and I know it's usually a credit per hour, but are you in the field 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, or it's...
Sure. Yeah, and I'd be happy to discuss it offline, and we can... look at what exactly that individual would be doing during that training and during that in-field inspection. So, yeah, we can definitely talk about that more.
If I can ask TJ, this is Pat River with Mershon Concrete. So if I'm understanding you correctly, I've spent a lot more than 10 hours teaching people about how infiltrators go together. I can use that for myself. Is that correct?
As long as, you know, it's not...
I'm authorized to instruct people to install infiltrators.
Okay, perfect. Then yes. Again, however, even if you train 80 hours every month, you can only submit 10 hours of that for your two-year renewal period.
Gotcha.
So you'd still have to get 2 hours somewhere else besides just instructing.
Now, but that, and you're going to come up with a... program in regards to how many hours that represents the people I've trained?
Oh, well, yeah. If you train somebody and they have the CWATS credential, then any hours that they spent being trained by you, that would definitely count for their credentials. So they don't have any limits. So they, if you trained them for 12 hours over a, you know, a 2 or 3 day course, then all 12 of those hours for them would be able to be approved for CE for their CWATS credential.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome. Thank you.
Doug Davidson from West Windsor Township and Mercer County. I just wanted to reiterate that I also feel there's merit in requiring credentialing for all contractors. In addition to the additional training, I think there's a lot of benefit for the continuing education. As it was stated earlier, a lot of the contractors are very busy. You know, if there's no incentive to receive that training, they're not going to receive it. Right now, I see some of the larger contractors getting credentialed in training. Unfortunately, though, a lot of the smaller contractors just aren't doing it. We have, you know, regulations that allow for advanced pretreatment and alternative disposal, but unfortunately, a lot of the contractors are ill-equipped to utilize those technologies. And you would think that, well, the engineer should really be driving that technology, but in many cases, with the smaller contractors, it's actually reversed. In many cases, it's actually the contractor bringing the engineer into the picture. You know, in a lot of instances, you know, when the contractors with their client, they're actually providing the upfront engineering fees. What's that going to cost for the complete job? And obviously, the engineer is not going to provide a design that the contractor is ill-equipped to install. He's going to give something that the contractor can actually install. So in many cases, we're not using best practices, for the site conditions. And, you know, as we all know, the site conditions are becoming more and more limited. So we should really be usually pushing for, you know, more advanced technology, not less, but especially for the smaller contractors. At least what I'm seeing in the field is a lot of ill-equipped to utilize that. So we're using probably not the best management practices for the site limitations encounter.
My name is Dick Batchelder. I'm with Infiltrator Water Technologies.
Yes.
Patrick, I'd like to piggyback on Doug's last comment. I think one of the, first of all, Infiltrator, we are strong supporters of training, both here in New Jersey. I just booked a flight to fly to Washington State on Sunday to be there for a training session for CEUs in Washington. So the manufacturers in the room, and even those that aren't here, we, as an industry, recognize that our growth is tied to best practices. And so I think anyone who's worked with us would be hard to find that we aren't committed to training. That said, I thought what you just said to Doug was resonated, because I think it's one of the unfortunate pieces that wasn't anticipated when this credentialing requirement was put into the reg. And that is, the smaller folks who aren't being credentialed can still do stone. And so they're going to that engineer and saying, I can't do the pretreatment system because I'm not credentialed. And when in those cases, it may not be 30%, could be 5%, I don't care. It's happening, and it's unfortunate. It's anti-best practice. Because so one of the bones of contention Infiltrator has with the regulations written is the stone contractors aren't required to be credentialed. And so as a manufacturer of a product, this is self-serving, we're very narrow. We don't make pretreatment systems. We make materials that are used in lieu of filter material. And we're caught in that, under that umbrella, as a result of the wording, because we are an innovative alternative system in the reg. So I think that Patrick nailed it when he gave Washington Township, or whoever these folks are, a lot of credit, for this kind of two-tiered thing, NEHA and licensing. And it's really hard to hear Mark say, we don't have the authority, or the department doesn't have the authority. That's really what stinks, because I think the groundswell, my sense in the room is, we like to have a state licensing program, a la, you know, some of the smaller local entities. So we'd support that, and I know all the manufacturers would. And so maybe it's a little bit of the onus is upon us to kind of take this from the bottom up and drive some legislation that gives the authority to the department to do the licensing thing. Because And the department's well aware of Infiltrator's position. We've communicated at length for a long time and in detail, but so I won't go through it, but the NEHA credentialing really isn't tied, in our opinion, substantially enough to the drain field piece. And that's not to say that knowledge of soils and conditions and things aren't important to do insulation well, but we really feel like that's a very big step for the installers of the filter material, which aren't required, and then the products used in lieu of the filter material. So, thank you.
So we were able to require for the advanced systems and for the in lieu of systems that they have the separate, certification and the certification. Can the state do that just for anybody? I mean, is there, you can't have your own licensing requirement. Can you say that every installer has to be NEHA certified?
We could.
It kind of like then levels the playing field for, some system that's a lot simpler to install than some other system, you still got to have this certification and this person,
Right, to require the credential for everyone.
A real sophisticated person, you don't need a sophisticated person, but we're going to have the same, contractor, and then if contractors are getting around it somehow, now if everybody has to have that.
We discussed.
Levels the playing field at least. It doesn't answer the question of should we people be licensed, but at least you're leveling the playing field.
We did discuss that during the 2011-2012 rule adoption, that this was the first step towards raising the bar of professionalism with regard to installers. And then eventually, with the next rule change, it would be elevated to everybody. So we did discuss that.
I mean, and Ed's with the pilot, so he's seeing that people are having a problem, that manufacturers are seeing problems. If we have townships like Washington that they have their own licensing program because there's problems, then there's problems. And at the Builders Association, we want things done right. At the left, and we always want to have uniform standards so we have a level playing field with some type of certification. We would not object to that.
Kathleen Gandy with Cumberland County Health Department. I just want to say I agree with the credentialing and for all installers. But one point, and we did bring it up throughout discussions, is the apprenticeship or the experience. I think experience goes a long way. We don't have a licensing for installers, but we have a registration for the inspectors for that section where the systems have to get inspected before real estate transactions. And we wanted to use experience as part of that registration, but our administration wouldn't allow it. So something that comes from the state that would encompass some experience as part of that credentialing, would help us at the county and local levels to, pitch it to our administration, our politicians.
I think it would also help with the installation, as Debbie was speaking about people that she's training along the way to have almost like an apprenticeship or something like that.
So one question is that we haven't defined in the regulation what sufficiently knowledgeable is on behalf of the manufacturer saying that the installer is sufficiently knowledgeable. Does that include certain number of hours of installation for their devices, for their product? That's just a question to throw out there.
Edwin Grasky again. The NEHA certification for advanced installers has a built-in two-year experience requirement, so you can't sit for that NEHA exam unless you've got 2 years of experience installing septic systems. So it's part and parcel of that requirement. So we're already getting that by requiring installers to take that exam. Mark, I just wanted to ask.
That gets into requiring the use a short order cooker. I can't be a short order cooker because I don't have experience in being a short order cooker. If I have to install septic systems, I have to have installed them already, I can never get started. Right? So you got to get over that little hump there.
I fully understand the manufacturers of the in-lieu products feeling that they don't have a level playing field, and I get that, and I think that we should really require training across the board. But I would make one point. The in-lieu products already get an advantage that kind of tilts the game in their direction, I think, a little bit, because they get a reduced disposal field size according to the TWA. Am I correct in that? I mean,
they potentially, for certain systems, can get that under certain circumstances.
Oh, is it very, because, and I didn't study it, but anywhere from 14 to 32% smaller for in-loop products. But the other, so I guess really I need clarification on that. Is it something that's very rarely applicable, or?
That's a standalone document, so it's.
Really what that document is about is, oh my gosh, 10, 15 years ago at this point?
2004.
12 years ago. There was a six-state agreement, and this covered many programs, not just on-site, where six state commissioners said we will have a certain amount of reciprocity. So we worked with Pennsylvania, Massachusetts to try to develop something for on-site. That effort in the end fell through, but in that process we came up with this approval that mimics some of Massachusetts' approvals and their rules. We tried to make equal. And so that's why that generic approval is very specific, has very explicit requirements to make it equal to what would be approved under Massachusetts rules for this concept of reciprocity. So yes, it exists, and there are some allowances in there, but there are also, you have to meet very specific conditions in order to use that approval, because that matches what was in Massachusetts' rule 12 years ago. So that's where that approval sits in context of New Jersey's rules and why it is very standalone and very specific.
I think I'm sorry I brought it up.
Yes.
I just have a quick question for TJ. Is the high school diploma still a requirement to get your NEHA license?
It is, yes. So you need to have a high school diploma and then, I believe as Ed was saying, 2 years of work experience in order to get the advanced level.
Targeting some of the contractors, because I'm more specifically, I'm talking about up northern New Jersey, where you have a lot of farmers that did not graduate, but they are the best contractors, and they've been doing it for a long time, and they are not allowed to even apply for their NEHA license because they didn't graduate high school, which is completely ridiculous in our world up in Sussex County.
TJ, can I break in? Can I break in a minute? This is Eleanor Krakowski from the on-site program.
Yes,
Back when we did this, I'm not sure if there was a limited time frame, but I worked with Crystal, and there was supposed to be an easy waiver process for New Jersey for the high school diploma. So I'm not sure where that has gone, but there had been an agreement that the high school license wasn't a stopping point. So I'm not sure if we need to look into that to find out, was that a limited time thing, or is that still an oversight that just got forgotten?
I'll look into that, and I'm looking into it right now, looking at past emails. I might have an answer before the call is over.
It just eliminates a lot of good contractors that are just not even able to think about getting any help because they come in and they're like, I never graduated high school. And they're embarrassed to say it. They're 50, 60 years old and they're just like, I can't even do this. And it's like, why aren't you getting any help? Like, I asked them, you know, they're like, I didn't graduate high school. I'm like, are you kidding me?
I think we can solve that because we had those discussions back when the first was implemented, so I think they just need to look it up.
Yeah. Not graduate high school, and then, you know what, we don't want them in stuff in the industry anyway. So way back.
B license.
Does NEHA have a case-by-case situation for these contractors that don't have their high school diploma?
Yes, we do. Yeah, we do have a policy in place where if somebody doesn't meet the eligibility requirements, they would be able to write a letter and we would evaluate that, and sort of an appeal process.
Yeah, Kathleen.
This is Kathleen Gandy again. Question for TJ.
How do you verify the 2 years experience for the application?
So it needs to be by a third party. So it could be somebody from the local or county health department, a CWAT certified coworker that works with you, HR department. I realize that a lot of individuals with this credential or that are interested in this credential are just family-owned businesses, and so it's really, you know, a two- or three-person company. However, it does need to be a third-party individual, so those individuals would be able to go to their local county health department and get that verified.
We've gotten a couple, but only a couple, I would say. And we were comfortable signing up on those ones because we know they're experienced. I was just curious on, you know, some that haven't actually done installations, like someone works at an engineering office, for example. She may go do soil, and she has a good handle on, you know, how systems work and whatnot, but I don't believe she ever installed any part of the system and holds a NEHA. So I was just curious.
Are there any follow-up questions on this for TJ? Okay, so what I think I'm hearing is that, you know, the credentialing, for the most part, is appropriate, and that the level of NEHA or some sort of basic credential is appropriate, and then the training from the manufacturer is also appropriate, and that it really should be across the board that all the installers have that level playing field. The idea of a New Jersey-specific license is something that we, you know, as I said, have to be given the authority to do. And as Mark indicated, you know, the department obviously would be supportive of that if we were given that authority and the resources to do so. And so I guess that the other question for the audience is that, you know, if it was a New Jersey-specific test, you know, should, what, you know, how will we go about, you know, designing a New Jersey specific test? You know, should
Pat Greenwood works on concrete, I think the people in this room could help do that. I think the people in this room by being here are probably willing to do that. I don't know how many people you have here right now. I'm guessing 30, so there's ask each person to write down three questions. There's 90 questions.
Right.
You could probably just take the health department, saw their test they give out, and
That was a question that I wanted to ask to Washington Township. How did you develop your test?
Just, I inherited it 30 years ago, and we just keep
updating
it as we go.
So as the code changes, so some of the questions to make sure that the contractors that, you know, may have passed it 15 years ago are still up to the current standards and you know, are knowledgeable.
If you think it through, like myself as a manufacturer, if I review your rules and then take my knowledge, you know, and so my question, what's the minimum amount of feet that the tank has to be away from a building, right? On what does a tank have to set, and how should that tank be set? Here's my three questions, all right? They're simple questions, you know, but an installer, someone who's done it, is gonna know from memory it's 10 feet, all right? Straight and level, you know, I can have it, which is higher, the inlet or the outlet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not gonna be hard. Right? You know, we've got a room full of inspectors and engineers here as well. You know, there's all parts to the existing code that would tell you whether an installer knows what he's about to do. And it's probably something similar to what you guys did initially.
I mean, I've administered my test quarterly to people who have read references, let alone high school education. I mean, some of my best contractors.
plan and understand why it's designed the way that it is.
And if I could, sorry if I'm speaking over somebody, sometimes it's hard to hear on the phone. So to jump in real quickly about that high school requirement, my profuse apologies. That is no longer a requirement for the advanced credential. You do not need a high school diploma. You just need to be over the age of 18, so we still require that. And then for the advanced, to have 2 years of experience. But again, no high school requirement. So sorry for misinforming you all.
And some reading, you know, extrapolating a quasi-plan and describing what that means. Yeah. So it's simple, and I think you're correct that the collective opinion in this room could probably act as an ad hoc committee to get at least a really good start on something that would be appropriate. Because you have a lot of different expertise here. Mm-hmm.
There are some folks in the room that we haven't heard from. Is there anything that you'd like to share, add on to this conversation?
I have a question.
Yes.
You, Mark, you said that you weren't allowed to look at the exam, or we?
No. TJ, do you share the exam with regulators at all?
Sure, the exam meaning give out the test questions so they can review the test questions without actually taking the exam?
Yeah, to understand what is actually on the test.
No, we do not. So anytime that we update the exam, we call in subject matter experts in order to review, edit, and change the exam. They have to sign a NDA. They're not actually allowed to take the exam for a period of 3 years after that. But so no, we do not share the exam really with anyone outside of NEHA.
But there aren't any sample questions for someone to prepare for the exam? There's nothing to review to prepare for the exam?
Unfortunately, at this time, no, there's not. That is definitely something that, aside from our CI WTS study manual, unfortunately, we don't have any practice questions. That is definitely a fallback on our part.
And TJ, this is Eleanor
yes.
Jankowski. There's a book that NEHA normally sells that the last time I looked it sold out. Are you going to be reprinting that, or is that the manual that you're talking about that won't be available anymore?
That I'm going to have to get in touch with our training department. We have a bit of a firewall between the two departments because they can't teach to the exam. I know it seems sort of silly that they could create a training manual without actually seeing the exam, but we have what's called a job task analysis of where we hand that off to them and they develop the training materials, but they never actually see the exam questions, and so that way the training material isn't being taught to the exam. But I will definitely follow up with them, and I can email Eleanor, and that way she can distribute that information.
Yes, even though the manual's not teaching to the exam, it is still teaching about the subjects that are part of the exam, and we've heard a lot of feedback that that's a very good resource.
Well, good. I'm very glad to hear that. Exactly. And so, yeah, it doesn't teach the exam, but it does cover every single part of what could be on the exam, because when the exam was originally created with this job task analysis, with all the subject matter experts, we then handed off this 100-page document to the training department and said, hey, this is what the exam content will look like for the actual exam, but again, the exam questions weren't even written yet. So I'm very happy to hear that people are happy with that training manual.
Some of them are.
Oh, true, yeah.
So the people that are complaining that the test really isn't applicable to New Jersey and it doesn't do, it asks questions that an installer shouldn't need to know, I have no way of knowing if that's true. I have no way of knowing.
I'll tell you.
Unless I want to take the test.
I'll tell you, it's true. Absolutely. It's back to what I said. How fast can you drag a race down Route 1?
But does it give you, does it test for what we were discussing here, that basic knowledge that we're asking for?
If you went with your basic knowledge of installation, using the state of New Jersey as the criteria, you would fail the test. You could have done it for 20 years, you would fail that test.
Yep. So long ago, Lower Tech again, and I concur with this gentleman. I took the test myself, I passed the test. It wasn't for being a designer and engineer for 30 years of my background in that, I would not have had a chance to pass that test. 90% of what's on that test has absolutely nothing to do with what these folks in this room deal with on a daily basis.
And most people who are passing the test are only just passing by 70s, 72s. I haven't really heard. I think I've heard one contractor that actually had like a 80 something.
This is Eleanor Krakowski. The actual number score doesn't matter because we know that this is a national test, and there are things that are not applicable to New Jersey simply because of the nature of the fact that it's a national test. So we're not looking for passing at 100% and an A+. We're looking for pass the test or you don't. There is no gradation there. So there's no judgment that you pass the test at 72 or 98. It doesn't matter. You pass the test, you know your stuff.
Yes.
Hi, this is Jeff Palatine, Field Health Department. I guess I have a bit of a question on that. Maybe a question for the state. I think the regulations refer to the fact that you need an contractor that needs to pass an advanced level course. Is there any determination whether or not there's adequate information from the basic course that should be used as the standard?
TJ, can you give an overview to the group on the differences between the basic test and the advanced test?
Yeah, sure thing. So it's really just a matter of difficulty of questions and then also the length of the exam. So the basic part of the CUWAS exam is 75 questions, and then the advanced level is 125. And the advanced level exam includes more questions, obviously, and then questions of greater difficulty. But it still goes off the same exam content outline of what I discussed earlier, where it's 10% plan assessment, 20% job staging, and 70% site development and installation.
I'm sorry, TJ, one more time. 10% was what?
10% plan assessment.
Thank you.
This is Ed from Pinelands, and again, the advanced course requires 2 years of experience. The basic course requires no experience.
Correct.
If you'll indulge me for a minute, just let me run through this list. I'm curious. This list seems to be very relevant to what we do in New Jersey when we install systems. So plan assessment includes site plan, basic surveying, topography, site features, material standards and specifications, soil profile descriptions, pump performance, dispersal technologies, conceptualize installation activity, calculate things like volume, elevation rates, measures, and weights. Pretty applicable, in my view. Job staging, installation plans, elevations, and topography. How to transfer design plan to the site, reconcile variations, identify conflicts with what's on the plan and what's in the field. Equipment needs and limitations, how many feet can you dig with an excavator, how many feet can you dig with an extend-a-hoe, etc. Materials supply, soil characteristics, math calculations, identify subcontractor and homeowner needs and potential conflicts. And then 70%, site development, ability to recognize soil characteristics. Very critical that an installation contractor know the soils that they're working. Specifications and installation techniques for tanks, baffles, filters, screens, pipe and fittings, aggregate, fill material, proprietary treatment components, pumps and siphons, valves, switches and tubings, electrical requirements, gravity pump and siphon dose systems, timers, remote monitoring, bedding testing, pipe connection methods, pump performance specs, total dynamic head calculations, general calculations and conversions. They all seem to me to be the basics of septic system installation, whether you're installing in Wisconsin or New Jersey. Now, granted, this is not a test on Chapter 9A, but it's germane to the specific test that the contractors are doing.
So I didn't take the test, but this description of the test seems to be pretty spot on.
But is this not the same description of the basic test? It's just the level of difficulty?
That's what he said.
Right.
The problem with the test is that if you were the site engineer, it's all relevant. If you are the installer, it's relevant to the extent that you have to run to the engineer and say, this is wrong. So you're not going to get the site installer, or you're never going to get the site installer to go back to the engineer. You got the wrong pump. This isn't the right pump. The dynamic head pressure is incorrect. Right? That's not going to happen. So, and the same holds true with the soil. If you have an engineer that's looked at that soil and said, this is K2 soil, right? The guy's, because it's going to be more money, the guy is not going to run back to the engineer, you made a mistake, right? Because it's the engineer's seal that's on the bottom of that print. And so the engineer's the one that's got to be, is going to be responsible for what he says is there.
I'm going to disagree with you, Pat, because I see on every single plan that comes across my desk, every single one of the very first notes at the top says, if the contractor identifies anything not consistent with what's on these plans, you need to identify it and report it to the engineer. So if they see a problem, hey, I'm digging a hole and it says it's sandy gravel down to 10 feet and I hit clay at 6 feet, well, I better call, I'm obligated, or it's my personal, because I'm not licensed, they don't have a license that can have insurance placed upon it. They're gonna be personally liable for any problems that's associated with that.
Okay, so, and this is the problem with the test. What's the right answer? Call the engineer. There's no other
But you way. Have to identify that there is a problem.
No, see, and that's the, you, having not taken the test, the test extrapolates down to what how an engineer can answer it, not how an installer can answer it in New Jersey, right? Because an installer doesn't have the liberty to change anything when the test is asking them what should he do.
And nobody's asking them to change anything. They're asking them to identify it.
You're missing it. Again, if you take the test, you'd understand it. If there was a choice, the soil's different than what's stated on the plan. And if the question gives you D, call the engineer immediately. Okay, makes good sense. If it says replace the soil, that's not the guy's call.
And so you're not saying the questions are bad, you're saying the answers are confusing.
The answers become other than what an installer can do in New Jersey.
Well, see, that's a big difference from what I heard from you before, that the questions were not relevant. It's not that the questions aren't relative, it's how you would answer them in New Jersey
different. I'm answering in regards to the test, not just necessarily the question.
All BHA's doing is they're taking out that step, though, where you call the engineer, and the engineer tells you you're going to scoop out that nasty soil down to the good stuff. So they're basically, what you're saying is BHA says that the correct answer is to remove the material until you get into a better material.
Right.
Which is what the engineer, when you call them in New Jersey, is going to tell you to do.
Can't do that
most of the time.
You have to call the engineer.
You have to call the engineer, which the engineer is going to turn around and tell you to scoop out the material until you get to a better material. They're going to submit a revision, and then you're going to go ahead and remove that soil and put select fill or suitable fill in to replace it. So all NEHA is doing is they're eliminating the step where you call the engineer as the correct answer. But ultimately what you're going to be doing is removing that material, correct?
But you can't, see, and that's the whole problem. You as the installer can't do that.
No,
you have to, in New Jersey, and this is the problem. It's the whole problem.
It helps to find the flathead.
That's
right. Work with the engineer to submit a revision.
You know, and if the answer,
I'll take it a further point. It's going to change from health department to health department on how that's going to get identified. Because in Ocean County, as Eddie points out, they're not out there, period.
Yeah. Right.
And so sometimes it's the engineer who's getting there after the fact.
So the questions, too many of the questions, unfortunately, refer, basically the answer would have to be call the inspector, called the engineer. I mean, I would say 20%, that's the right answer in New Jersey.
But they can't make that decision unless they know the difference.
No, but what you...
You still have to be able to identify the difference between clay and sand. You still have to know that. Because I can't, if I'm an installer and I don't know the difference between, you know, K1 soil and K4 soil just by, you know, looking at it, and so I can't make the decision to have to call you if I don't know it first.
I think what they're trying to say is you can't go into that test taking it with New Jersey code in mind. You have to put New Jersey code completely out of your head and just take the test as if you're just a contractor anywhere and hope that you get the right answer, because the way that they're worded for your answers are not what we would do as New Jersey contractors specifically. The answers usually aren't even there from what I've been hearing.
And that's kind of what I think you're not trying to do is, you know, how... make sure that that contractor has the common sense to see that it's a situation where that soil is not suitable for a system, and that they should keep pursuing something. But obviously in New Jersey, you know, lots more regulation, is there's a couple more steps involved to make sure that all the proper authorities are notified to ensure that system is going to work.
I think there's a huge disconnect here. I understand he is in a position they don't want to give out the test, obviously, for obvious reasons, but is there any way to all this NEA can give you folks a state a copy of the test exam without the answers, just to see what's on it? I guarantee you, once you look at that exam, your whole view on this is going to change on the certification. I agree that we need training and certification, don't get me wrong, but I think I'll put this in perspective for you, a lot of this with hearing.
I definitely appreciate the conversation, and I think this is something that Eleanor, Jamie, and I can definitely discuss. Of, you know, this is something we run across quite frequently, to be honest, with our different credentialing programs. So our different credentials, we don't just have the CWATS credential. We have others for the REHSRS and retail food safety and manufacturing food safety. And when we gather these subject matter experts to write these exams over a period of 5 days, they are coming from all across the country, so some California, some in the Northeast, some in the Southwest and Southeast and Central U.S. And so each individual provides their own sort of bias about what their individual state regulations are, their local county regulations. So it definitely does have, for each of our credentialing programs, we try to encompass what is the best practice for the entire nation. But again, to your point, this is something that we could definitely discuss with Eleanor and Jamie in order to see exactly how beneficial is it to the individual New Jersey regulations, and, you know, what might need to be changed.
Yeah,
definitely. Dick from Infiltrator, a couple of things. Eleanor, I hope would agree that and this may be just something to take away, because we're in New Jersey and we're in a room in New Jersey, but Charlie and I travel all over the country. The regulations in New Jersey through the design and inspection processes are very, very advanced, okay? So that doesn't guarantee anything, but I live in Maine, and we have a licensed site evaluator. So you don't have to be an engineer to design the system, but you've got to be licensed by the state, which is exams and continuing education. Again, we're all for training, but take some comfort in the fact that the regulations are very stout in New Jersey. These things aren't being drawn on the back of a cocktail napkin and being installed on Saturday morning. Maybe they are.
Okay. No.
Well, because that happens all over the country.
Okay. It happens in many parts of this state. It does.
Okay. So and you've got great variation from ocean counties
and towns.
You know, you got even within a state, we see great variation, but we see wide variation all over the country. And again, I just want you to understand, nobody needs to trust me, but I took the liberty of calling out Eleanor on the preface for this comment to say she knows a lot of the other regs in the country because she's been an active industry participant. And these regulations are very strong, and you should be proud of that. That said, a national exam with 125 questions crafted by a wide-ranging panel of experts is invariably going to be a challenge for a local installer, whether he's from Hollow, Maine, or somewhere in New Jersey, okay? And what I'm hearing is a New Jersey test is really kind of ideally where this could go, and I don't know how to get there. But maybe, and the last thing I want to mention is, how many other states require NEHA credentialing to install the septic systems? I don't think there's anybody else. I think Iowa is tied to Iowa for certain system types, I think.
They have a licensing program.
Dan Olson.
Yeah, the other states have a licensing program. They recognize the credential, but they have their own program.
Again, many states don't. Okay, so you've got 50 states. You've got a lot of states that where they're a local management. Not every state has either or. Just don't, you know, I think it comes back to, Jamie, you put a short list of here's what the takeaways were, and one of them was the appropriateness of the NEHA test. And I would say I'm not sure that I personally agree with that.
And I'm an engineer, so I wouldn't mind taking it. That wouldn't mean
I think what time, unfortunately, is the only standard that we have in this state.
Right.
So that's kind of why it was implemented, is the fact that it is the only standard that we have. And I fully agree with you. If it's not pertinent information to our contractors and our type of systems being installed, then by all means, let's try to make something that does meet New Jersey standards. But unfortunately, as you heard from the gentleman up there at the front table, is that's not something they can implement at this point in time. So unfortunately, NEHA is the only thing that we have to go by right now.
So there's two parts here. Is who is credentialing the fact that you're trained? So it's either a national credential, which is what exists, or a New Jersey credential, which does not, and would be probably, you know, a while for that to happen. And then second is, what is the test for that credential? NEHA has their two tests, their basic, which Iowa uses, and their advanced, which New Jersey uses, and then both are recognized by other states which have a licensing. And then is there a New Jersey-specific test, and who would administer that? So one option could be possibly working with NEHA to develop a New Jersey-specific test, or somehow a group of stakeholders and volunteers come together and experts and develop a New Jersey-specific test. But the question still remains, who administers that credential, that licensing
program? You can't give out a license, so someone would have to go out of the certification.
Exactly. So this is a multi-stage. This is a multi-stage issue that we have to figure out how to address. But the reason that we called you all here as stakeholders to figure out which direction should we be going in. And so from what I'm hearing is that a New Jersey specific test would be the most appropriate. And that, if possible, a New Jersey license would also be most appropriate. But if it's a stepwise thing, we might have, who knows when we would be given, if we would ever be given the ability to have a license program.
Have you had conversations about this with the New Jersey Environmental Health Association?
Mm-hmm. You haven't, right?
And they're an active group. I haven't interfaced with them in a while, but I mean,
Broad range of concern and the Environmental Health Association.
New Jersey Environmental Health Association.
Yeah. They are represented on our advisory committee, correct?
Yes. Lorna Bonoran is their representative on this committee.
Yeah, they were invited today.
Jeff, you're involved with them, right?
I have not been involved with them.
No, okay.
So what are you suggesting, Chris? That they
I don't know, I just think having them part of this conversation. I don't know if they could be a potential resource for a test development and an administration. I don't know the logistics of that. But I think they should definitely.
I thought they were a chapter of NEHA.
Exactly.
I think they use the NEHA tests for most of the REHS stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Excuse me, Jamie, I don't know if you could do it, but I've taken a couple exams right through this agency to be a licensed wastewater treatment plant operator.
We have regulations for that.
No, I know.
So,
well, I know. So
site
the first step is to get
licensed
that
site remediation professionals,
right.
Licensed wastewater
right.
and water operators.
Right.
We have regulations for that that are statutorily
right. So if you can get that statutory empowerment, I mean, there, you know, they require continuing education credits. They charge a license renewal fee. They administer, they develop and administer the test. And then there's four different levels, depending on the complexity of the treatment plant that you're operating.
Right.
Similar to kind of, I guess, what we're talking about here, basic systems versus advanced systems. I recognize the first step is statutory.
Yeah, and the second step is having the resources to do it. Right. So they're all kind of tied together.
All those things were established when there were resources.
But I'll tell you, Brian, I think they're self-funding. Because my license renewal fees went from like $10 to, I pay a lot now to renew those licenses. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that the department covers its costs, but it goes a long way toward offsetting its costs.
Yes.
Chuck Pickney from Big Engineering, why don't you get Rutgers involved and involved in everything else?
Yeah.
They could probably figure out a way to get the legislation passed, and they could figure out a way to charge for it. Is there?
They can definitely figure out a way to charge for
it. So but you're saying...
A group over there as opposed to, we were talking to Mark and all over 20 years on this kind of thing, and they never have anybody to work with. It was just two of them, nobody there. Not without that basis, they have a lot of people.
So you're saying to develop the test as well as to administer some sort of licensing?
Yeah.
But again, I think that they would need the authority to do that.
Yeah, and they're pretty good at getting the legislation if they want.
Okay.
So it brings somebody in with a little clout to get that legislation back. Especially if they have a dollar sign behind it.
Yeah.
Gary, since Washington Township has the ability to mandate that their installers get,
have a test.
Yeah, test. Right. Then somehow the mechanics have to be there that other municipalities.
Sure, all the municipalities have the right to do what Washington Township is doing.
Much the same as, because I find this statewide, the state said minimum requirements 4 inch, but we suggest a 6.
Right.
So I can pay right now from the southern half of New Jersey. Everybody but one county gets a 6 because of one of the other counties likes to shove off the ice on another filter. Period, end of sentence.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So the state can recommend something and you'd be amazed at how far that goes.
Well, I don't think we can recommend that the health departments have their own licensing program. I don't know. I mean,
you can recommend anything you want.
There's a problem here of recommending or requiring things that, again, the municipalities or county health departments don't have the mechanisms to do without providing resources to them to do that.
We have to walk a very fine line when it comes to state mandates and state pay.
Well, that's why I usually
I know you did, but we have to walk a lot of a fine line.
Do you guys charge for the license?
Yeah.
Okay, so there is a funding mechanism that you guys have developed.
Yeah.
All right, and I'm not in favor of seeing my customers spend more money, but by the same token, it's going to come down to it. Because I get to see the guys on Saturday. I get to talk to them and spend 2 hours trying to explain to them which end does the effluent go in and which end does it come out, how does this work, and then I get the homeowner on the next element, and when the object ultimately for me is to sell a septic tank, sure, I'm going to spend the time to do it, but I can't teach them everything on one element at all. So I'd love to have it where, sorry, I can't tell you what you don't have a license. That'd be an easy cop-out for me, right? But it would also help the state. And that's kind of the direction you guys got to go, one by hook or by crook.
Yeah. Any other thoughts? Is there anything that...
What's the status of a septic management rule? Is that Highlands or...
Attorney?
You know better than I.
Because we have to, we don't have to.
Well, the planning rules, the new planning rules say you should have one, but they don't tell you what that is.
Exactly. It's licensing, it's quasi-management.
Yes. Highlands doesn't have any.
But I, you know, we hear that we're all going to have a septic management
right.
rule, and then it goes away, and, you know, septic management. And so having an ordinance and having a license is a step towards a septic management rule.
So
is that a way to open up that door? I don't know, there's too many doors, but
yeah.
So many doors. But I mean, having a license is, you know, it's done very well for us. It maintains the quality of people that work and it provides our homeowners with some level of satisfaction or assurance that they're gonna get a quality job. Not always things go wrong. Always.
Have any of the other health departments that are here looked in? Do you know if you've looked into something similar for your?
In Cumberland County, we have not looked at licensing. We our county seat over 13 municipalities, five of them separate, and so they license and permit in their individual municipalities, not necessarily for septics, but we just do the plan application approvals. Call them a permit, if you will, but and we do ensure that our contractors have their criteria and certifications. You know, we adhere to the state. Our administration, I don't believe, want to do anything outside of what we have to do. They look at all this licensing as cost to the contractors, cost to the homeowners. We're in a poor county, so that's their view, and I you know, would agree at some, you know, talking about Rutgers, their fees are very steep. There was a septic inspector training that I would have loved our contractors to go to, but the fees were just too steep for them. So we did in-house training for them ourselves, but you know, they're the challenges that we look at in Cumberland County, you know, just the expense of it. I know in the long term, it's a benefit. It's, you know, to regulate that industry and to, you know, ensure the proper credentials are there, definitely. That's not what most people are looking at.
What about the other health departments? Have you explored licensing or additional requirements?
We throughout township have not specifically investigated discussion.
Cumberland County, again, we do have a maintenance ordinance and a license for the system, but not, we're talking here about the actual installation and licensing of the individuals. So we do try to maintain the operations and the maintenance of systems, but not those installed.
And Chris, you also require that they're registered as a home contractor? Do you also require that they have registration as a home contractor? Patty?
Is there a standard septic installers test that's a whole New Jersey? From what I understand, each town is a little different. Their interpretation. So if we had a standardized installers test that now is updated with these advanced systems, that's one part of it. Then if you want to install a jet, a poop, if you need to shadow with that manufacturer, maybe not necessarily be on site and you're the installer, maybe, hey, I have two systems coming in, come see what they're all about, and then
So that's what we've been talking about, that there is not a New Jersey specific test. So there is not a test that tests to New Jersey specific code or the types of systems that we commonly see in New Jersey. But what we were just suggesting is that, you know, a New Jersey-specific test would be preferred, and credentialing, you know, that you have taken a test would be preferred for all installers, and that for advanced treatment installers, they be also trained by their manufacturers.
Right, but then once you get the feedback from the health departments where people with deficiencies or problems, then you can start to act on remedying it and fixing it. EMSA is really a well-oiled machine. It's a shame that New Jersey SMA doesn't exist. And there's so many people here that are in different facets of this industry that, you know, we didn't show up for this. We need to put something together because it is all different vested interests in how to make it run smoother, where it's not impacting the installers, the homeowners, and even our time. You know, so maybe we need to start thinking of putting together New Jersey SMA, just get it together. And work together. There's so many different factors from health departments to manufacturers.
Does anybody else have any insight into Patty's comment? I thought that I had heard rumors that there had been some efforts to kind of put together an association in New Jersey, but it never...
It was brought up when the test first was required, and, you know, I guess it was the first batch of us that were taking the test. We all, oh, we really should have, and this is the group of people that are the most interested, and book that went away. I've been at this 44 years. It's too many diverse people that have an interest to try and come up with a collective, right? So I guess it's the one place where we really do need the state's forceful guidance, right, to start something in order to make the rest of it work. I mean, if you get one township that, you know, hey, we figured out how to do it, it works. The answer's there, but there's no way that interested parties can force that on the entire state. You know, I tried, and some of the people here are going to recognize me, to come up with when the state said you have to have a certain certificate for the vacuum test, I tried with every county to get one form as a standard. And some of them were real receptive immediately, and some of them right from the get-go didn't want any part of that form. And, you know, on some of them, I'm filling out a paper that appears to have come from the county because it's on county letter, you know, as for the vacuum test. It's just not that easy, you know. And that's just one person trying. So that when you talk about statewide, it has to be the state. Right? You know, I don't know how you can do it any other way. You know, otherwise you get a couple towns that get it right, and it's, you know, it starts working like a well-oiled machine, or at least it attempts to.
All right, well, we're kind of coming up. I think we're actually past our time. Oh, we're very far behind. Sorry. Any other additional thoughts? Now, you can send me comments or suggestions. You should have my email after this, and we'll stay engaged. We will post, as I said, the recording. Hopefully, the recording worked out well. If not, we'll post some notes from the meeting and share with you the sign-in sheet. But we do like to hear if you have any additional comments. So we'll bring the comments that we heard back to our management and see what we can move forward on this. But I would, you know, recommend that you talk amongst yourselves also about what other options there are for New Jersey to have some sort of program, licensing program. Anything that Mark or Eleanor you want to add or ask of the group that they're? Okay. All right. Well, I thank you all for coming, and please do send me a message if there's anything in addition that you'd like to have shared. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, TJ.
He was there.
Yeah, thank you.
Gosh, you were there, TJ. Thanks
for
having us. Well, at least we got it. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.